Hey everybody, this is Ben Morton and welcome back to episode 16 of the podcast. In this episode, I'm joined by Sarah Walker-Smith, who is the CEO of Shakespeare Martineau. She's the only female non-lawyer CEO in the legal top 55 and was recently named as the UK's most influential legal CEO on social media. Sarah is a trained accountant by background, having worked for PwC and Deloitte, and Sarah believes in putting people at the core of everything she does, as well as drawing on the marketing and branding experience gained when she was working at Boots PLC. Sarah loves to challenge the norm in the legal sector and the wider business world. She's passionate about leveling the playing field and encouraging everyone to bring their most authentic selves to work. And in her own words, as a self-professed geek, Sarah loves learning and is currently exploring the relationship between leadership, purpose, and trust. She also strongly believes that good business is both purposeful and profitable, often with one leading to the other. And recognising the importance of life beyond work, she enjoys writing, directing and performing in musical theatre productions, which she believes develops many skills that also help her in her role as a CEO. I absolutely loved my conversation with Sarah for the energy, the authenticity and the leadership insights that she brought to this interview. So, without any further delay whatsoever, please enjoy my interview with Sarah Walker-Smith, the CEO of Shakespeare Martineau. Sarah, hello. It's great to have you on the show. Before we start, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks, Ben. We had an amazing day yesterday. We had our first ever virtual all people conference. So over 800 of us online doing all sorts of stuff, including loads of Christmas activities last night. So we've got a real buzz about the place today. So yeah, good.
That's amazing. I saw a couple of little snippets of that on LinkedIn, I think. From what I saw, it looked fantastic.
It's great. I was so proud of the team. I mean, a year ago, the events team had never done an online event. And you know, what they've learned this last year, I'm sure we'll talk more about that, has been phenomenal. They did an amazing job.
Brilliant. So, Sarah, the very first question I always ask guests when they come on the show, just for context, really, is can you just tell us kind of what your current role is and a little bit of the career journey that's got you there, please?
Yeah, sure. So I guess mine's a bit unorthodox, really. But I would say to most people, don't worry about that, because I think increasingly in the future that there will be no such thing as a standard career route anyway. So I'm currently the chief executive of a national law firm in the UK. We're a pretty decent sized law firm. We're growing. We've got an ambitious strategy. But my background is I started life, wait for this, I applied to go to drama school and was going to go off and be an actress. At the last minute, I didn't go. I got a job as a trainee accountant, qualified as a chartered accountant, then worked for PwC, got a bit fed up of audit, moved over to Boots the Chemist, obviously the big retailer. They turned me into a marketeer and a change manager. I did an MBA while I was there. I then left there to go to a law firm as a marketing director, where I relatively quickly expanded the role, became the chief operating officer, and then left there to become chief exec of another law firm.
Wow.
So not your average route, I don't think.
So there are so many like career changes of direction in there that, yeah, that I'd love to ask you about. But the one I've got to ask you about, how did you go from wanting to be an actor, I think you said, to a chartered accountant?
It's not, again, not your obvious. And I have to say the alphabet is to blame. So for personal reasons, I decided not to go to drama school at that point. At aged 18, there were a few difficult things going on in my family and personal life at that point. And I just went into the local careers office, having just done my A-levels, and said, I need a job. And I think they literally went down the alphabet. Accountancy was the first one. And that's probably my first tip for people, is you can have a plan, but actually often the best things happen if you keep an open mind and don't have a plan.
Wow, amazing. You've slightly thrown me with that career journey there. So,
But I've kept acting, Ben. I mean, this is the other fantastic thing. Life's not binary. So you can find ways of doing the things that you love alongside other stuff as well. I don't think choices are quite as black and white as we often think they are. So I've carried on my entire acting, directing and musical theatre career alongside my business career as well, albeit in a very different way to if I'd have done it professionally. But I've enjoyed it just as much, and I've had the chance to play some amazing parts and to do some world premieres and all sorts of things. And again, I never thought that was going to happen either. So you just don't know. You just don't know.
Yeah, and that this is a fascinating point you've just raised, and it's got created a question in my mind. So do you think I guess it's your hobby and passion in the acting, does that translate and help you as a chief executive in work? I'm assuming there probably is some crossover learnings and skills there, right? Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
There's huge crossover actually, Ben, and it's an article I've been thinking I really need to write, and I was thinking about it anyway, but the last year, goodness me, in 2020, those skills have been hugely important. So yesterday I was in a TV studio broadcasting to all of my people, standing on a stage delivering a speech, and there is no doubt that I find that a lot easier to do because of my acting background and the other stuff. But it goes much more than that as well. So acting and theatre is all about teamwork. You know, if you think about it, there is an enormous team of people involved in a theatrical production. Yes, of course, you see the actors on the stage, but they're the tip of the iceberg. And I think you can apply a lot of that teamwork and what you learn in the theatre about having a vision, about getting people playing to strengths, about getting people working as a team and being there to support each other. All of those things translate directly from the theatre to professional, certainly professional services where I work. So, you know, our lawyers are like the actors, if you like, but that backup team, that huge technical team that wraps around them to bring the show to the road and look after the clients involves so many more people that you don't see in the same way that you don't see the technical people in a theatre.
Yeah, that's incredible. And Sarah, from that experience and your sort of entire career journey, like, what would you say are some of the key leadership lessons you've learned from that? And how has that journey sort of shaped you as a leader, do you think?
Yeah, well, Ben, I think you've hit on the first one already, which is to be yourself, really. I think I used to keep my theatre and my work really separate for quite a long time. And then it really hit me, particularly when I started directing theatre as well, that the skills were interchangeable in both directions. So I would say bring every facet of you, of the person that you are, the skills you've learned, they are still relevant. And don't create these neat little boxes. Actually, life is one great big Venn diagram. And the more you can find in the middle of that Venn diagram that fits your personal life, your values, your skill set, your experience, and your business and your work, to pull that together, I think that's the sweet spot where most people can feel truly fulfilled. So that's probably the first biggie. And the second one we've touched on as well, which is don't necessarily get fixated with a plan. Keep an open mind, look for opportunities, and you'll be amazed what happens to you when you have the right mindset. So that's hugely important. Being brave, definitely important. Having that courage to just take the first step to do something that's outside of your comfort zone. And really the final one, and I could talk for at least half an hour on this whole subject, but it's got to come from you. So you need to have very strong core belief in what you're doing and what you stand for, and stop worrying about what everybody else thinks about you. A colleague of mine once said to me, what anybody else thinks about you is none of your business. And I thought that was a brilliant thing. You know, worry what you care about, what you feel, what you're doing, what matters to you, not what you think other people are thinking about you. You're probably wrong about what they're thinking about you anyway, and it just doesn't matter.
Yeah, and Sarah, from what you've just said, I think it's your first and final point. So you talked around sort of bringing your whole self to work and not sort of breaking your life up into different boxes and segments, which is fascinating because that's something that so many of the MDs and CEOs who come on this podcast talk about. Almost their breakthrough moment as a leader is the moment they stop trying to be somebody else.
Somebody else.
And
yeah.
Just naturally become them.
And that's how I got this job, actually. So I'd been a COO for quite a long time. I knew that I was more naturally suited to the number one job, not the number two job. I was happy doing the number two job because I worked with a great guy that was in the number one job. But I kind of knew instinctively that I was supposed to be driving the bus, not the bus conductor, if you like. And I I got shortlisted. Well, I got headhunted for the job that I'm in now. I'm a bit unusual. I'm the only woman in the country doing this job, and I'm the only non-lawyer, which in a legal world, law firms are run by lawyers traditionally at the very top. They've very often got amazing non-lawyers around them, but most of the people at the top are lawyers. And the process that I went through took a long time to get this job, and I never thought I was going to get it. I went into it to learn. I hadn't been looking. So it was something that came out of the blue. And long story short, 5-6 months into this process, I was down to the last three, and I walked into the final interview the day before I'd written a presentation about what I thought a chief exec should say. I ripped it up the night before. I went in, I showed pictures, and the first one was a 5-year-old ballerina. And somehow I came out as the first female non-lawyer chief exec of a law firm in the UK.
That's incredible. Congratulations.
And that's exactly because I had this moment before I went into that where I thought, stop thinking about what you should say and think about what you want to say. And it put me into this mindset of win-win, which was, if they don't like what you say, you won't get the job, but that will be a good thing because it wouldn't be the right job for you. So by going in there and being yourself and saying what you believe and what you think, not what you think you should believe and what you think you should think, you can't lose. And it absolutely tipped me into, I can't lose if I go there and do what I believe. And that was a massive moment for me.
Yeah, that's incredible. So the question then becomes for me is, if you and so many other leaders have had this moment of realization that actually just be myself, and from that point onwards, they're skills as a leader kicks on, their comfort as a leader kicks on, their kind of ability kicks on. Do you think there's a way that you could sort of accelerate that aha moment and get to that point earlier? Like looking back, joining the dots, looking back, as I think Steve Jobs said, like, is there a thing you could get to that moment of realization sooner, do you think?
Possibly. Do you know what though? I've got another mindset, which is don't regret. You are where you are. You go forward from where you are today. So I do spend a lot of time reflecting on learning and could I do things better, but I don't regret things. So I would argue with you, I've probably had to go through all the experiences I've been through to be the authentic person I am today. And each one of those experiences added something to me. So I would say if there's a point where your gut is telling you to do something and for some reason you let a limiting self-belief stop you, that's probably the moment of choice where you could have broken through. That's probably what I'd say. But like I say, I don't spend too much time looking backwards and regretting. I spend my time, the phrase I'm coining at the moment is, we're climbing a mountain. I want to look up the mountain, not spending a lot of time reflecting on what's behind us. We've got to look ahead. We've got to keep going upwards and forwards.
Yeah, that's great. And how do you as a leader yourself spot what might be some limiting beliefs? Do you have a process to use? Do you have confidence, coaches, mentors? What does that look like? A lot of the time we don't know their limiting beliefs, do we?
Yeah, we all need a support network. I certainly had another light bulb moment where I realized I didn't have to do it all myself, and I could, you know, work with brilliant people who I could learn from, whether they're people in my team or people outside of my business. So I'm very fortunate that a couple of years ago, I joined an amazing external senior leadership network. It's the Leadership Society of St. George's House at Windsor Castle. And I've gained so much from talking to and listening to fellow leaders. So, you know, get yourself into a network where you can talk to people and learn from them. And there is no substitute for that. And I think that's hugely important. But the other thing that I've started doing, I'm not great at routine, but what I do is I bought one of those 5-year diaries, which just has literally 2 or 3 lines for each day. And it goes over a 5-year period. And I just reflect each day what I learned or what I could have done differently. And I spot those self-limiting beliefs coming through. And it's really interesting. I'm into the second year of doing it. So I can now look back about what I was saying this time last year. And it just reinforces if I can see some of those negative things coming back in again.
So that's amazing. I'd love to get sort of really granular on that for a second, if we can, which is like a beautiful segue, because I just read one of your LinkedIn articles this morning, and I've written down on a piece of paper in front of me something I lifted directly from it, which was around reflecting, distilling, learning and embedding. And I just wrote how underline. So that routine you have with your journal, can you just take us through that in a little bit more detail? Like, when do you do it? Kind of how do you do it? Do you carve out a separate time to kind of look back over the pages and look for a pattern, because this whole journaling reflecting piece is something I'm really passionate about. So I'm curious to know what that looks like for you.
Yeah, thank you. So the first thing to say is it doesn't matter if you don't do it every day, if you don't have a routine. I mean, I think sometimes, I remember once when I had my first child, I read Gina Ford. I don't know if you know anything about this, but Gina Ford advocates this ridiculously extreme routine about how to bring up a baby. And I looked at that, it turned me off straight away. So what I don't do here is have any rules. So for example, I've had a manic couple of weeks. I haven't filled that journal in for 2 weeks, but I know at some point over the weekend, I'll go back and I'll just reflect and I'll do it. So be kind to yourself and just do what works for you. If you set yourself up to a slavish routine, you're probably going to break it, unless you are somebody that is brilliant at keeping to slavish routines. So make this easy for yourself, because if you don't, you might not do it. You'll think you failed. And that mindset about failure is really important as well. So I will do it in fits and spurts. Some days I do it every day and it doesn't matter. But then what I do more holistically is I step back every so often. And I guess roughly for me, it's probably starting to happen about every 6 months or so. And I take a step right back, and once an accountant, always accountant. I've got a couple of pie charts that I draw, and I draw the pie charts about where I've been spending my time versus where I wanted to spend my time and where I should be spending my time. And I do a bit of a mini reboot, and I kind of reset. And I do, sorry about all these corny phrases, but I do this thing where I go, right, I'm getting off the pitch. So I pull myself mentally right off the pitch and I look at what happened in the last few months. And I say, right, what do I want to take forward with me? And I do that partly in terms of where I want to spend my time, but I have a to-be list as well as a to-do list. So my to-be list resets me in terms of what I stand for, who I want to be, where I think I can make the biggest difference. And it all connects back to purpose, which is something that I spent some time, probably about 7 or 8 years ago now, really clarifying what my purpose was and distilling it into one line. And I pull it all back and say, am I delivering on that purpose? So it kind of happens in fits and starts. It happens at a micro level. And then every so often I pull myself back about, am I spending my time in the right place? And am I being the person I want to be? And does it connect back in with why I'm here?
I absolutely love that. And that pulling yourself back every so often, is that scheduled into the diary, or is that more instinctive? You just think, oh, I need to do that.
Yeah. And, you know, different things work for different people. For me, it will be very instinctive. I know when I've got to get off the pitch. I'm in that phase right now at the moment. Actually, there's been some things happen in the last few weeks where I've thought, yeah, certain things have fallen into place. I can now get back off the pitch. It's time for me to reset where I'm going to refocus, reprioritize, etc. So it's more delivered by events or hitting milestones rather than saying it will be every 6 months. But for some people who really, really like that kind of routine and that certainty, that might be a better solution for them.
Yeah. And how long do you spend doing that? Is that a couple of hours where you sit down and sort of just give yourself space and time to think, or?
Yeah. So I probably shouldn't admit this, in the bath. I do lots of thinking in the bath. So that's my downtime. And of course, the world's changed for us all, hasn't it? My downtime used to be commuting, actually. So I used to spend a lot of time doing that. So now I might go for a bit of a walk. I'll go in the bath. The other thing I do, I'm a big believer, those of us who've got, as we most of us do, incredibly busy lives, find a way of multitasking. So I have a routine where I take my little boy to some of his clubs on a Saturday morning. He goes to club. I go and sit in a coffee shop, or at least I did before we were in lockdown and tier three. I will be back again. And I stick some earphones on, listen to some music so that I block the world out, and I just sit and I do some of it then as well. So I find that dead time when I'd just be walking around shops waiting to pick him up again. I kind of try and use time effectively like that as well.
Yeah, I do a similar thing. I call it making time in time. So it's exactly the same when my daughter's at a club or I'm dropping her off somewhere. Instead of, it's all too easy, isn't it? Just to, in those moments, to sit and scroll on your phone.
And I'm Facebook.
Not, yeah, I'm not anti-tech and anti-social media, but it's just trying to use it intentionally and not finding ourselves addicted to it.
Yeah, I've also got a series of different notebooks. So I've got like I probably learned this as an auditor. When you're an auditor, there's a permanent file, there's an audit file, there's a tax file. So what I have is I have my day-to-day notebook, I've got my bigger strategic-y, project-y notebook, and then I've got my personal learning notebook as well. And I am very clear in my head what mode I'm in when I'm writing in those notebooks. So the personal one, don't write a thing about our strategy or our business or the commercials or the numbers or anything like that. The strategy one, I write the big thoughts around the business and where we're going and everything. And the day-to-day one can be anything. It's notes from meetings or actions or things I've got to do or whatever. But I'll make a conscious effort to go to those other two books if I know that there's something big going on in my head that I want to really write down. And that gives me the ability to go back and read through this and see the journey and the trends. And I know that's different to the journaling. This isn't really journaling. This is more something very specific, like if I'm planning an event or if I'm thinking about how to do the strategic review, I'll go and focus some dedicated time into writing just about that.
Wow. I love that. We could do a whole episode just diving into this. Maybe that's a second episode.
Sell stationery as well.
Yeah. I'm also a self-confessed stationery geek, so we've got to have a lot in common. Sarah, changing tack ever so slightly, there's something else I saw you wrote, which was where you talked about focusing on going back to better post-COVID as opposed to going back to normal in inverted commas, right? I think whenever we talk about normal now, we need to put in inverted commas. Can you share some of the things that you are working on or considering in order to sort of bring that vision of going back to better to life? What does that look like for you and the organization?
Yeah, and actually, Ben, it kind of segues from the previous article. So the previous article you referenced was talking about leadership resilience. And for me, I wrote the article that was called End With Why, which was, I think we need to review our purpose, our leadership purpose. And the thing for me is, I've been really rooted in this purpose for quite a long time now. It took me a long time to get to it, but when I found it, it stuck. And my purpose is very simply lighting the path for others to follow. Well, it's actually bravely lighting the path for others to follow. So I started to reflect on all the things that were happening this year and thought, right, how do I flip this into an opportunity to push forwards on that purpose? And that purpose, of course, is very generic, but you could broaden it. So for me, what I recognize that I'm doing is I cringe by saying this, but I appreciate I am a bit of a role model because I'm a woman doing a job in a sector that's not been traditionally done certainly by women and certainly not by non-lawyers. And the sector that I work in has been a bit exclusive. It's been a bit elitist. It's not been very much a level playing field. So I said, right, okay, thinking about my purpose and my hopes and aspirations for the sector, but actually for society, for the world, for business, for politics even, how can I play my part? And I think of this as we're all pebbles, really. If we all throw pebbles into the water and create small ripples of change with the things that we can focus on, those ripples will grow into a big tide of change. And I think, my goodness, we have to make something positive come out of the last year. So in terms of the bits that I can influence and I can control, I can push my business forwards to do several things. So firstly, really ripping up the stereotypes in law. I think the new ways of working that COVID has given us mean that we can make the legal sector more accessible. So we need to really accelerate how we do that in terms of how we employ people, where we employ people, what we expect of them, reorganizing our offices, reorganizing our entire employment contracts, all of those things we have to do. The second one is abundance mentality. So I think we've seen a spirit of fantastic collaboration within businesses, within the sector, but of course, between the private sector, the public sector, and businesses playing an even bigger civic role. I don't want to get too political on you, but I despair sometimes about our political system. It's not necessarily set up in a way which helps get the best for everybody. So I think businesses need to step into some of that space and do our bit. So for example, we've really then refocused our business strategy to say, how can we collaborate with other businesses even further? How can we make sure that we're playing an even bigger civic role in our local communities? And our whole house of brand strategy that we've just launched is also about blurring those boundaries to be able to do that further. So I think, you know, this can play a role in accelerating our business strategy, which will accelerate change in the legal sector, which will accelerate, hopefully, better business. And I have a very strong blueprint that I call good business, which is how business can be purposeful and commercial at the same time. And I actually think by having successful commercial businesses that are diverse, that have a level playing field and that are very much purposeful and playing their part, I think we can make the world a better place. So sorry for the motherhood and apple pie.
No, I love it. And it really resonates with, I recorded another episode last week, which actually doesn't go out until quite a few weeks after this, but it was with a CEO of a company called Olio, which is a food sharing app. The CEO's Tessa Clark. And she was talking about a very, very similar thing. Sort of, she had this deep, deep sort of commitment and passion around sort of profit with purpose, and businesses must do more to do good and sort of play their role in society rather than just chasing profit.
The thing is, Ben, these things are not mutually exclusive. Indeed, one leads to the other. I truly believe this is riding on the wave now of where people want to see business and the world go. And I think the more commercially successful businesses in the future will be purpose-led businesses. You know, we have a massive thing that we're doing around social mobility. I guess I'm an example of social mobility, which it took me a long time to work that out. But actually, once several people had pointed it out to me, I realized I was. So, you know, for me, how can we genuinely make sure this isn't just platitudes, that we are pulling people through and leveling up? You know, I know leveling up is a political agenda, but it should be a business agenda as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So going to be conscious and respectful of your time. So we'll just finish with a few slightly more sort of quick fire questions, if that's okay. The first one is, as a leader, as a CEO, sort of what's keeping you up at night at the minute? And if you're not literally kind of losing sleep because you've got your evening routine nailed down, what's occupying a lot of your headspace at the minute?
Yeah, so I sleep like a log, you'll be pleased to know. The key thing for me is how we make 2021 the year of the possibility, I suppose. I've referenced 2020 as the year of the mountain. It has been like climbing a mountain. I want to make 2021 the year when the words and actions come together. I think we can all have these brilliant words, great rhetoric. I want to make the action happen. So for me, next year is about converting it into action, in a nutshell.
Great. And what are the one or two books that you've read that have really had a significant impact upon you?
Yeah, the problem is, Ben, you're asking the wrong person because I've read hundreds of them. But I would say that there are two authors, one more recent, one going back a while, actually, that always resonate with me. And I could talk about so many books, but if I may talk about the authors. The first one is Stephen Covey, probably the first management guru that I started to read his stuff, 25, 30 years ago. And it's an old one, but the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People and the subsequent books that have been written off the back of that, they still stand the test of time. And if in doubt, go back to that. You won't go wrong with that. More recently, anything that Sinek writes, I love his latest one, The Infinite Game. So Simon Sinek, start with why, but now into Infinite Game. And he is very relevant. And I think he speaks brilliantly as well. So if you're not into reading books, Google him, look at some of his TED Talks.
Yeah, fantastic. And what are you reading about, learning about, curious about right now, Sarah?
Yeah, so I've got two books in front of me at the moment, actually. One's called Corporate Rebels. I love that. I believe we need to be the disruptor of the legal sector. And I'm learning about other disruptors and other people who've managed to change their sectors. So I think that's important. And then I've always been a fan of Gary Hamel, who wrote a brilliant book about strategy back with Parler had back in the 90s when I was doing my MBA. And that was all about competing for the future. He's now rewritten his whole idea, saying that you'll compete through humans, basically. And he's written a book called Humanocracy, latest book, literally just out. So that's a current one for me. But I'm also writing a book and a musical, so I'm not spending as much time actually reading as I should be at the moment. So that'll probably be a bit of a Christmas job.
Wow. And seeing as you mentioned Christmas, Sarah, what's Christmas going to look like for you at the end of this crazy year?
Oh, loads of reflection, as you can probably imagine. Lots of coziness, lots of walking, I guess. Just reflecting. I think we're all going to need a bit of time to decompress. I think we should. I think we need to acknowledge that there could be some longer term scars of this for all of us. And I think the more we acknowledge that and accept that and think and really talk to other people as well about how we feel about the last year. What I'll tend to do is I'll talk about what we've lost. Because I think we need to acknowledge that and we need to grieve for the things or indeed the people that we've lost. But then I'll flip it into what have we gained and how am I going to use that as rocket fuel for next year? So I'll go through that whole process and inevitably I'll do some singing and write some songs as well, I suspect.
Amazing. I think you're so right. That last piece around kind of reflecting, kind of grieving, all of that. I also think for many of us, whether we realize it or not, I think this year has created a real sense of sort of not always underlying, but sort of underlying low level stress and anxiety that maybe we've not appreciated. It's there quite as much as it is, I think.
And we do need to. I mean, we're spending an awful lot of time on mental health at work at the moment. We have to acknowledge this. But, you know, having acknowledged it, you know, we can go forwards with some very positive questions about the things we want to see and do differently. And the two questions that I'm asking myself and my people at the moment is, why not? And I think we need to flip into this why not mentality. And also, if not now, then when? Because we have such an opportunity ahead of us now for change, and we must take it.
Yeah, absolutely. Sarah, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I've enjoyed our conversation so much, and I just know everybody listening will take great value from this episode. I know I mentioned it earlier, but in all seriousness, I would love to get you back on the show, perhaps late spring, early summer, and we can talk about reflections as we move through 2021 and that year of possibility, right?
Love to, Ben. And I, you know, I'd love to hear how all your listeners are getting on as well. You know, none of us have all the answers. I think we learn more from hearing from each other. So yeah, I look forward to seeing how people comment on this and any feedback or ideas they've got for me as well.
Yeah, brilliant. On that note, Sarah, how can people get in touch or find out more about you if they want to?
Yeah, sure. So I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. It's funny, I hardly used it a year ago. And now, much to my hilarity, apparently I'm the number one legal social influencer, whatever that means, but I find it hysterical. But I'm very, very active on LinkedIn, normally listening or reading other people's stuff and people commenting on my stuff. So if you look for Sarah Walker Smith on LinkedIn, that's probably the best way. I use Twitter a bit, at PG Walker Smith, but really LinkedIn's my bag.
Amazing. Sarah, thank you so much. Have a lovely Christmas break, and wishing you a fantastic 2021.
Likewise.
There you have it, folks. My interview with Sarah Walker Smith of Shakespeare Martineau. A particular highlight of that conversation for me was her practice of stepping off the pitch to pause and reflect, along with her to-be list, which I absolutely loved. And as always, folks, if you are enjoying the show and getting value from it, please do rate, review and subscribe via iTunes. And do please share it widely across your social media and with your friends and colleagues, as it really does enable us to keep bringing you more and more fantastic interviews with inspiring leaders, CEOs and thought leaders in the field of leadership and the associated areas. That's it for this episode. I will see you all again very soon. Take care and lead on.